Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. North Slope Borough Mayor Jake Adams is a whaling captain, and at a Native Studies seminar in Fairbanks, he told students about conflicts the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission has had with the International Whaling Commission. But he didn't get very far into the question and answer period before he was asked about what he thinks about Greenpeace and that organization's anti-whaling stance.
Yeah, it's like a normal reaction from a group of people that only sees that saving the whale is better than trying to save a culture. I think their attitude has been very disgraceful to the culture of the Eskimos.
Good.
What are you going to do when you run out of whales?
I don't think we're going to run out of whales. I think there's enough bowhead whales and the oceans that they'll never run out with the amount of whales that are being caught by the Eskimos. There's no way that we're going to kill off all the whales unless that something happens during the course of developing or trying to develop the offshore areas. That's one of the concerns that we have. The effect of operating offshore where the migratory route of the bowhead whales are. As we're concerned, they'll get displaced from their normal pattern of migration, because in their normal pattern of migration are also areas that they stop and feed on. We're afraid that if they get displaced and move further out where their food sources is not available, we're afraid something is going to happen to the bowheads. But there is no way in hell that the amount of whales that are being caught by the Eskimos is going to deplete the bowhead whales.
Well, I hear that there's a lot of waste, and there's Eskimos all along the North Slope, and you really can't control them from killing the whales.
It's like the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission have instituted some controls over the own whaling people. All of the whaling captains have agreed to a management plan which describes the methods of how we're going to take the whales and how that they're going to utilize the whales. I think you'll find we had a couple of people from Greenpeace up on the slope in the spring of 1978. They spent a week in Point Hope and they spent a week in Barrow. And they were very impressed with the whaling. They wrote a report that was favorable to the Eskimos, but not to the standards of what Greenpeace represents. So that report was squashed within Greenpeace itself. It was never published or distributed publicly. And we also had a group of Friends of the Earth people up in Barrow this spring. And they spent about 10 days out on the ice with a whaling crew. They're observing what is going on, and they also wrote a very favorable report. And they took that report to the International Whaling Commission meeting. However, they caved in at the International Whaling Commission meeting because of the pressure from other conservation groups. There's some conservation groups that are willing to come out and help, but they also get pressured from other groups that doesn't understand what we are trying to do. I think they finally went out and saw what was happening, and One of the most difficult problems that we're facing is the cow count. It's very difficult to see a cow when they're migrating up in the springtime. We've been trying to figure out a way what is the best method of determining the cow and calf ratio. Still haven't really determined what kind of method we want to use, but some of the methods we've tried in the past hadn't worked. One of the methods we're thinking of is probably something like a hot air balloon anchored onto your ice, so it doesn't make any noise. We're sitting up there and be able to look over a good area. That's something that hasn't been tried. It probably will be tried sometime. Just aerial methods, aircraft methods, doesn't work. Anytime they hear that noise, they'll sound.
The next question asks for clarification about environmental groups making reports on Eskimo whaling and whether state groups made favorable reports, which were later buried at the national level.
Then there was some kind of political pressures or communication barriers which broke that?
That's right. The Alaskan groups has been very supportive of the efforts of the Eskimos, but once we get to the national level of some of these conservation groups or the international level, that's where it breaks down. Yes, in fact, in most instances, the decisions are made by the conservation groups on the national level about what the position of that group is going to be. I know that the Alaskan groups have been very supportive of our efforts. It's like this, we've always told the conservationist groups that we do have some mutual concerns, but I think we have to understand each other of what we represent. And that's been the problem between us and some of the major conservation groups, is that they have been unwilling to support the Eskimos and their effort on the subsistence whaling issue. And told them more than once that unless you come around to supporting the efforts of the Eskimos, I don't think there's any way that we can work together. Because if we're going to work together, it's got to be a two-way street. You got to support us on this issue, and we'll support you on this issue.
Somebody wanted to know what the investment costs are in taking a whale.
Investment costs? Give me a for equipment and food and stuff like that. Generally, the equipment is probably a one-time cost, probably somewhere around means $3,000 and $4,000. Now it's more than that. The one-time cost, we're looking at the boat, the harpoons, and other stuff, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000 to $8,000 cost for all the gear you need for whaling. That annual cost in running the crew probably runs around $3,000 or $4,000. But the whaling captains don't do it for economic gains. And they're out $3,000 to $4,000 a year, because what they do with the whale is just distribute it to the community, and they don't sell any of that whale meat to anybody.
A couple of years ago, when I did research on the issue, I read that part of a problem with depletion of bowheads was affluence, and a lot of the younger people in the northern areas could now afford to pay the expenses of bowhead whale hunting. And a lot of the younger people were hunting without the long period of apprenticeship that had been going on before. And as a result, more whales were being lost. Is this accurate?
Well, I think it's not totally accurate. to a very large extent, the older whaling captains spend an awful lot of time talking to the younger people and teaching them how to hunt the whales. We also think the because of that public pressure that was being thrown around in the newspapers about those kind of insinuations, the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission reacted by instituting the methods of how we're going to be going after the whales, such as we prohibited the use of the soldier gun. It's totally prohibited now. We have to attach a line and a float to the whale before they can utilize the soldier gun. And most of our older whaling captains spend an awful lot of time teaching the younger folks how to hunt these whales. And we also start off very early. I started going out, she was about 10 years old, although I didn't start riding off into being a member of the crew that went after the whale. We started off around the camp, helping things out. But at the same time, we're listening to our elders about how they're doing things and why they're doing it. That's the method that's been utilized to teach the younger people about whale hunting, the traditional manner that the Eskimos always utilize. Any other? No, thank you.
North Slope Borough Mayor and Whaling Captain Jake Adams answered questions at a Native Studies seminar held on the UAF campus last semester. I'm Paula Schiller. You've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. Last summer, the state legislature gave cities and villages some rights to control alcohol. Under the Title IV Local Options Law, villages may adopt ordinances regulating importation, sale, and consumption of alcohol. But there are a lot of buts, what-ifs, and maybes to be cleared up. Carol Bakey of the Alaska Legal Services Corporation in Anchorage is the statewide alcohol coordinator. She explains the whys and wherefores of last summer's local option law.
That was the result of a longstanding effort by local organizations and regional corporations and people involved in the area of alcohol abuse. Alcohol is a tremendous problem in Alaska. In fact, it's considered to be the number one problem. You have death by exposure, accidents, family violence, community violence, all of these things. The state legislature was acting in response to local questions about what people could do about alcohol abuse. Hearings were held all over the state by the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and extensive hearings were held in Juneau. The committees in Juneau, in fact, traveled out to the regions to hear testimony from communities because of the concern over alcohol. What emerged from that was two pieces of legislation that were adopted last summer. The first piece of legislation banned possession in the villages. The second piece of legislation rescinded the first piece of legislation and provided for four options. A village can prohibit the sale of liquor. They can have sale of liquor only in a community liquor store, or there can be a flat prohibition on both the sale and importation of liquor. That's clearly the driest option. The last is sale only by those with an approved license from the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. I can't stress enough that a village cannot ban possession of alcohol in the village. Unfortunately, or fortunately, because of community enthusiasm, a number of villages put these elections on the ballot last fall. McCoryuk, in particular, banned possession of alcohol in the village. The Office of the Attorney General of Alaska said that McCoryuk couldn't do this. I want to stress that this was not McCoryuk's fault, because McCoryuk thought that it was acting with the imprimatur of the state legislature, that is, with their permission. What was not understood was that even though that piece of legislation was adopted by the legislature, it was then essentially removed and is invalid. So there cannot be a banning of the possession of alcohol in the village, and the only options are the ones to forbid sale of liquor in the community, sale only in a community liquor store, or, to go the driest route, a flat forbidding of both the sale and importing of alcohol, or finally the wettest route, the sale only by those with an approved liquor license.
Those are the options. The next question has to be, how can villages and small cities adopt these measures?
When a village decides that they want one of these options adopted, the procedure is first to get a petition up. At least 35% of the voters in the village have to sign the petition. That means that if you have 100 people in your village who are registered voters, at least 35 of them have to sign the petition asking that one of the choices be placed on the ballot at the next regular election. This means that the petition should read, to our city council, we would like the following placed on the ballot. Shall we ban the sale of alcohol in our village? Yes or no? At least 35 of your 100 people in the village would have to sign that. For example, if you had 50 people in the village, then 18 people would have to sign the petition. So the 35% figure depends on the number of registered voters who voted at the last regular election in your village. As the law now stands, once you've filled out that petition, if you're a second-class city, which means that you're a municipality, you can vote at the next regularly scheduled election, which would be next October. If your village, however, is an established village, you would then be able to hold a special election. It is said that the lieutenant governor will be able to conduct and certify that election. Here we run into a few problems. Nobody understands yet what it means for the lieutenant governor's office to conduct or to certify the election. I've talked to the lieutenant governor, Terry Miller, in person, and he's promised me that he, along with Patty Ann Pauley, the director of elections, with whom I've also spoken, will together do their best to clarify what this means. Also, currently before the Senate is Senate Bill 65, which is right now in the Community and Regional Affairs Committee and the Judiciary Committee. Senate Bill 65 provides that a second-class city, a municipality, can also vote in a special election, which means that a village would not have to wait until next October to vote.
Got that? Two laws passed last summer, one rescinding the other, leaving the villages and municipalities four options. An option can be placed on the ballot by petition of 35% of the registered voters, and depending on the outcome of a current piece of legislation, voting on the option can be held in a special election or in the next general election, which would be October this year.
Once the election is held, if 51% of the people in the village decide that they want to ban forevermore the sale of alcohol, that means that any liquor licenses in the village will be removed as of the next December 31st, and that liquor will no longer be sold in the village after that date. The same applies with importation if you ban importing of alcohol into your village. The important thing about the Title IV Alcohol Local Options Law is that now the state will back up the village decision about what to do about alcohol use and abuse. If you ban the sale and someone violates that, the state penalty will attach. And the penalty gets higher with every single violation. It's important to understand right now that there are a lot of questions that the legislature and the Lieutenant Governor's office and the Director of Elections have to answer about this process. In my considered view at this time, no election that's been held is valid. Nobody knows what it means for the Lieutenant Governor's office to conduct or to certify the election. A second-class city or municipality can only vote at each regularly scheduled election, which would be last October or this next October. An established village can vote at any time on it, but again, the Lieutenant Governor's office has to conduct and to certify the election, and nobody understands what that means yet. At Legal Services and in other offices throughout the state and other organizations, people are trying to come to an understanding of what this means and to get the state legislature to do something about it.
Now, we know that McCoryuk held a local option election that was not judged to be valid. Other villages may also be in the same situation.
The bad news is just beginning to filter in. McCoryuk is the one that everyone knows about. McCoryuk is very anxious, in fact, to hold another election so that they will have these state law enforcement provisions backing them up. I've learned recently of a couple of other villages, and in fact, it looks like there might be a lot more villages that have liquor ordinances that are not currently valid. This is unfortunate because when a village has had so much concern over alcohol problems, everyone would like to be certain that the village will have state law backing them up when they decide to do something about the issues.
This does not mean that alcohol control ordinances in cities like Barrow or Bethel are invalid. Those ordinances and others in cities around the state were put into place under different legislation and are not affected by the local options law. In the past 3 months, Alaska Legal Services has geared up to help villages sort through their choices and to make sure they follow the necessary technical procedures to adopt local option ordinances.
Alaska Legal Services was awarded a grant from the State Office on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, which is called SODA, to help make the Title IV local alcohol options law a reality for villages. We're here to provide technical assistance for the villages. The lawyers involved in the project are me, Carol Bakey, and I'm the statewide alcohol coordinator, Maureen Pie, in the Nome office of Alaska Legal Services, and in the Anchorage office, we also have a legal assistant named Barbara Thorne. The three of us are putting together the alcohol project to make Title IV local options alcohol law a reality for villages. The three of us at Legal Services will do our best to help your village if you have any questions about the law. You're welcome to contact me, Carol Bakey, in the Anchorage Legal Services office, and you may call our office, Collect. We'll make sure that someone handles your request and calls you back to answer your questions. We're also willing to travel to the villages and to explain the law if people have questions.
Alaska Legal Services is happy to answer questions, but alcohol project workers do not feel as though they ought to push any of the options on a village.
In dealing with these issues, we at Legal Services are quite conscious that we can't tell any villages what to do. What we have to do is listen to what villages want and act as the translators to translate the language of the village into English and then into the legal language that will make it possible for the village to do what the village wants to do. As such, we stand ready, willing, and able, whenever we're able to do it, to provide the technical assistance to make this law a reality. We'll be glad to answer any questions that you have, but please remember that the village has to make the decision and the village has to have the commitment to making the law work. Another law in the books isn't going to fix anything unless people want that law and it means something on a day-to-day basis in their lives. The internal commitment of the village to make the law work is an absolute necessity that comes before any lawyer's language or any ordinance or any statute.
The Alcohol Project staff doesn't want to direct the community's choices, but will they offer advice based on how various communities have handled the problems in the past?
We could. But again, I think the community has a better sense of what it wants than I would have, or than Maureen would have, or than Barbara would have. We don't have to live in the community. We don't know what the rules are. We don't know how it operates. A village may not even have a liquor store, therefore it would be silly to ban the sale of liquor in the village. However, an airplane may come in 3 or 4 times a week bringing a lot of liquor. And then that would mean that the village might want to consider banning the importation of the alcohol. Something else that has to be considered is whether or not the village has a village safety patrol officer, and whether or not the village would be able to enforce what choices it makes. Another consideration is how far away is the nearest magistrate. Another consideration is, would you really want to punish your brother for being a bootlegger? So a village has to think about all of these things. And that's why I'm not in a position to tell a village what's best for it to do. But after listening to the particular concerns of a village, I might have some ideas. But I only give those ideas when I'm asked because, as I said, I don't have to live there. And it's important for the village to decide what its priorities are. Otherwise, the law will fail.
That was Carol Bakey, statewide alcohol coordinator for Alaska Legal Services. She can be reached at the Alaska Legal Services office in Anchorage. I'm Paula Schuller, producer of Chinook at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.